Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
This episode is brought to you by Paramount Plus. Get in, loser! Mean Girls is now streaming on Paramount Plus. Join Katie Heron as she meets the plastics and Tina Fey's new twist on the modern classic. Get ready for more of the rumors, backstabbing, and jokes you loved from the original movie with some fetch surprises. Rated PG-13. Wear pink and head to ParamountPlus.com to try it free.
What's going on, everybody? Hope you are having a wonderful week so far. Podcast time. And this week got the one and only Absolute on the episode. Loved catching up with him. He's an amazing producer. And I've seen videos of his DJ sets and it looks like he's a bloody amazing DJ. So without further ado, Absolute, what's cooking, man?
Hey, how are you? Good to see you.
Yeah, good. That green hair is looking wonderful as ever. I love it.
Thank you. I gave it a little fresh ears just for you.
Yeah, thanks, man. I appreciate it. How's life anyway? Where are you at the moment?
Yeah, it's good. I'm just in my studio in London, in London Fields, which is where I've been most of this year, actually. I've just been hibernating away for January. And just as gigs start to kind of kick back into place. So it's my happy place.
Nice, man. How was your Christmas period and all of that? Was it good?
It was good, actually. It didn't really feel that festive. Mm. I think just because there was just so much chaos going on before Christmas, especially in London, that it just, didn't really feel that festive.
Feels like a lifetime away as well. I can't believe it was like literally only a month ago. But
yeah,
I don't know why it's like... This year's, we're in February already, and you're like, oh my God, it's mental.
Well, the good thing, summer's coming. The days are getting lighter.
This is true, man. This is true. The days are getting lighter. Although I'm in Detroit right now. And
okay. How was it there?
We had like about 6 inches of snow last week. And it's like still, it's like -5 today, which is actually pretty warm for how it has been recently.
Wow.
But the mornings are getting lighter, so there's always a positive. It's always a positive.
That's good, yeah. I mean, there's not 6 inches of snow here, so that's something.
Yeah, so have you always
How was your Christmas in the year?
It was wicked, man. Like, I was lucky enough to get back to the UK to spend time with the family, and I had like about a month off, which honestly killed me. I can't stand taking time off. And I think after COVID, having like 18 months off and then having another month off after being back touring. And I was just like, I was so fed up with just like not touring. But it was wicked.
Yeah.
It was nice to see everyone. And it's good to be back out in the States touring and then back to Europe for some of the summer, which would be nice.
Nice. Where are you from in the UK?
From Bristol.
Oh, amazing. Yeah, I'm from Devon, so that's
Oh, really?
Yeah, so that was like my city that I used to go out in.
So you'll know I'm not from Bristol, but it's just easier to tell people that I'm from Bristol. But I mean, it's the closest city. I'm from like Somerset, near like Cheddar.
Oh yeah. So,
bumfuck middle.
Well, we're not far then. Yeah, literally. We're like little southwest.
Whereabouts in Devon are you?
From Torquay.
Oh yeah, you're so, like really close to me. It's like an hour away.
Yeah, super close. Yeah. So it's all by the beach, and you know.
How was it growing up in Torquay?
Do you know what? It was actually quite a good place to grow up because really? I would just be out on my bike or on my skates every day.
Yeah,
you're in this like there's just beaches everywhere, so you can just go in on bike rides, jump in the sea. You know, and so as like a kid growing up, I think it's great. Yeah. And then when I started kind of hitting sort of music age, there were a few places actually down there then. So there was like a small music scene and there was like record shops, which I would just be in all the time.
Yeah.
And then that scene seems to have it doesn't really seem to be there anymore, but there was luckily a bit of a scene. It was more like there was lots of techno and hard house and trance back then, which is there's a club called The Monastery, which was kind of famous down that way. I don't know if you ever got to go.
No, I didn't. To that. Was it actually in a church?
Yeah, so it's in a converted church.
Epic.
Literally the DJ booth was the altar.
Oh no way. This is so good.
And it opened, it opened at 12 o'clock at night and shut at 6 a.m. And it didn't serve alcohol. there's lots of very friendly people there.
That's amazing. I remember going to a rave in Weston-super-Mare back in the day. And I went with a mate and his family were like super like religious. And it was like a church rave that the church put on. So it was very similar to that. It was just like a big party, but no one was drinking or taking narcotics. Always interesting places that, because you kind of get everyone like, I don't know. I don't drink myself, but I think when you have like a whole crowd of not drinking or taking drugs, it's kind of weird in a club environment.
Yeah, I mean, there definitely wasn't any like normal services going on in this place. It was 100% full club vibes at all times.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, there was definitely lots of narcotics going on in that place back then.
Strictly class A's.
But you know, it meant that what it did do though is it brought all these different people together from these different walks of life and actually created like a safer space where people could kind of let loose. And I guess for me, that was the first time I'd experienced one of those kind of spaces where it wasn't like you're worried that someone's going to punch you for like, you know, which is what maybe you'd be more, you know, more inclined to at the other venues.
Yeah.
So that was like a nice.
I also think that's the thing in the UK. I don't really see it much. Maybe I'm just so far away from it in the US that I just don't really pay attention. But growing up in the UK, there's so many like little clubs in each city. And a lot of the clubs are very commercial based. And it's literally just like a bunch of lager louts going out for a punch up every night.
Literally,
especially in places like Torquay and Weston-super-Mare and like all the like seaside towns where it's a bit of a destination for people to go. So you get all the northerners come down and it's kind of like their party kind of place. Gets a bit messy on weekends.
That's it. So it was great. There were a couple of little spots where it was more about the music and, you know, where people could go there and enjoy that side of things, which is obviously the part I was interested in.
Yeah, definitely. When did you start writing music? Because I'll be honest, I had only come across you from your String Theory record.
Okay.
So
yeah, that seemed to be one that a lot of people, it kind of did raise the bar for me, that track.
Yeah.
I think because Pete Tong picked it as an essential new tune. It was just kind of like out of the blue. I didn't expect it. I just kind of, not just threw it out, but I kind of put it out on my own label at the end of the year. Just expecting it to be a bit of a club record, and then because it's this banging techno tune with orchestral strings on it, and then it kind of ended up being it was Pete Tong's essential new tune. Annie Mac was playing it every week. It just kind of just really kind of put all eyes on me from that moment. But I guess from there, I've probably been making music as Absolute since about 2015.
Okay.
So it's, I guess, yeah, I was going to say 5 years, but obviously we've had 2 years of, yeah, of lockdown, which kind of just, you always just need to add on an extra 2 years now.
Yeah.
So that was, so I was always kind of, even when I was a kid and just collecting vinyl, I was always just obsessed with dance music. And then I would have, I think it's like Dance EJ, it was just like really, really old school.
Yeah, I remember
music production that was like super basic. And then I think Fruity Loops.
They put, you used to get Dance EJ off on the Kellogg's cornflake packs. that's
maybe that's where I got it.
That's how I got my first copy of it on Kellogg's. Yeah, on like a cereal pack.
I love that. Imagine that now. Like,
I know. They don't do shit like that anymore. It was like, can you remember the sample packs that you would get on like, I don't know if you can remember these, but on like Future Music magazine, you used to get like a DVD that was like full of samples and then it had like a tutorial on it. And that was on the front of a magazine. And you like, and on Mixmag used to do CDs like every month. And
yeah, the cover mix, yeah, was amazing.
I remember I had a Milo did a vinyl once, and it was like a 7-inch vinyl on the front of the DJ mag. It was so cool. I'm like, why don't they do that anymore? But
yeah, that's it. I mean, it's that, I mean, it's, well, for me, like growing up in a small town, you know, that was kind of a lifeline into, yeah, underground dance music, being able to, you know, hear these cover mixes from artists that you may not have heard of, or you'd probably been reading about, but hadn't had a chance to see because they wouldn't come down to Devon.
To that,
so it,
yeah,
was a real,
totally.
It was a real sort of lifeline, and you know, really, and such an enjoyable thing that you would really look forward to each month.
I think also back then this was like pre-internet. It wasn't pre-internet, but it was pre-web 2.0, kind of what we know now. But like, because there wasn't people streaming music. There wasn't really, Napster hadn't started then, I don't think. Maybe it had, but I just was completely unaware of it. But like the whole culture of dance music, where it was kind of like a secret to a certain extent.
Like you had to kind of be in the know.
Yeah, it was like a cool kids club that you like.
Yeah.
And there's something about that that I kind of miss. Right now it's amazing because house music is so commercialized, which it allows us to do what we're doing, right? Like, that there's never been a time where there's this many DJs that are as successful as they are. But there was something really kind of special about the early days where it was like a very small club. It was very small kind of minority of people that would go into parties and DJs and producers and things like that.
Totally. And I think as well, even just, it kind of maybe stems from that, it, like that 90s rave culture where you almost, yeah, like, even more so than that, when you like, you had to ring a number at this time, yeah, or go to the phone box at this time. I love the idea of that. You know, yeah, there's this kind of like, you've kind of got to work to get into this like magical euphoric rave. Whereas, yeah, it just adds this whole extra level of excitement.
I totally agree. I did that. I threw a party in Detroit before the pandemic, and we did that. We did like a text thing where you had to text a number to get the address. And there was something about that just like, it just added like a special vibe to the party. And I don't know if that was just me thinking that when I was there, but it just kind of like, it wasn't just like people just, oh, it's, we're going to this club tonight, we're going to that club tonight. It's like everyone like texting you and asking you where the venue is, like trying to get to know what the venue is before the show and things like that. And it's just like, there's something special about that, which I feel like we've kind of lost a little bit. But I'm not complaining about today as well, if that makes sense.
I just love the whole idea of it. It just kind of creates such a good suspense. And,
yeah,
you know, it's like you've been let into this special club, which is, you know, it's just going to make things, you know, so when you get there, you're even more related, and it's just like...
Totally, totally. Did you ever do any, like, free parties when you were younger? Did you go to many?
Not really, yeah. I think I kind of missed those. I don't know, I was maybe slightly...
Because I only went to one free party, and that was at Kent. It was an abandoned leisure centre in Kent, in Maidstone, I think. And it was New Year's Eve, like, I can't, like, easily 10 years ago. Maybe longer than that, actually. That was a weird experience.
Yeah, I've heard about them.
They're weird.
I think there was, like, I always heard lots of rumours, but there just didn't seem to be... any kind of close to me when I was, I heard about them when I was like really young, a teenager, when I wasn't really able to go. Maybe there were still some going on that I just didn't know about.
Yeah. I bet some came back during COVID as well. I bet some people, definitely started. Yeah. I love the concept of it, but it's just not for me. I'd rather.
Yeah.
It's a bit weird. Definitely. sorry, we were on a massive tangent then. So string theory, and you started producing 2015. What was the kind of point where you were like, I need to start writing music? Were you DJing beforehand?
Yeah, so I was running club nights in London, like underground queer parties for maybe like 8 or 10 years, which was amazing. Like it was
what were they called?
So incredible. So the first one was called Super Electric Party Machine.
Yeah.
And it was, I did that with Larry T, who was like one of the like OG club kids from with the whole RuPaul crew.
Yeah.
So it ended up being this like hotbed of just super colorful, loads of drag queens, loads of club kids, just like really just super fun energy.
Yeah.
And then Larry moved to Berlin, and then I started a party called What Club, which was, something that was, because originally it was a weekly party that was like, and it's quite relentless doing a weekly party till 6 a.m. every week. So I decided to do a monthly party, something that was a bit more curated, start pulling in like other names and other artists, just make it feel a little bit more special. And it was still would be like full of club kids and you know, that vibe still, which was amazing. But then there was a kind of, and we kind of built it up, it was like the official Pride party. We took over one of the main stages at Milkshake Festival in Amsterdam, which is like huge queer festival, which is amazing festival. But then I like knew it was, and it was all great, but it wasn't, I could feel like I was missing something. Like I needed to pursue music as my sole pursuit. And I think it got to the point where I just had to just take a leap of faith and just be like, okay, right, I'm stopping everything apart from stuff that is going to push me forward in the absolute project. So I was DJing all the time then, but I kind of just stopped any gig that wasn't, because I was kind of just doing music. So I was putting on club nights and then just DJing where I could to make money to kind of just survive. But they weren't necessarily all gigs that were, you know, pushing me forward in the right direction. So I kind of just stopped all gigs that weren't pushing me forward, and just spent as much time as I possibly could just writing music. And then after that kind of scary leap of faith is when things started
to actually happen.
And that was maybe after 2015. It was probably a couple of years after that, because there was still a crossover period where I was making music as Absolute and still doing the club nights. But the great thing about doing all those nights is it just, you know, I just met every person on the scene in London. You know, just made so many friends, so many contacts. And it was, you know, it was a wild ride for sure. Just having like this, and also being able to create these safe spaces where people genuinely felt free to express themselves in any way, you know, whether it was gender expression or just letting loose and being who they want without any kind of prejudice. And beyond that, it was kind of celebrated, and we kind of felt like, you know, like a little family rather than just... you know, it wasn't bitchy. It wasn't, you know, people trying to clamber on top of each other. It just felt like a good
proper party.
A good proper party where everyone wanted to have a fucking great time and wanted the best for everyone around them. And that's really kind of stuck with me.
Yeah, no, I love that attitude because I think it's so important. Like, everyone has issues in everyday life, right? Everyone has things that they're going through. Everyone has things that they're trying to deal with. And for me, like, a nightclub is one of the only places where people can literally just forget about all of that shit and kind of just escape reality for 5 hours of their weekend and kind of put it all put it all under the carpet for a little bit.
That's it. Yeah. No outside pressures. Just kind of be who they want to be for that.
Yeah.
For that amount of time. And especially in queer spaces, I think that's like even more important because,
totally.
You know, it's like you, sometimes that's the only place where they feel they can be themselves, which is.
Well, I think that's it. Is in, I guess when you're a minority and you're kind of in the general public, I'm pretty sure it can feel pretty kind of tough to express how you actually feel because you're going to get judged and you don't want to get judged and kind of you've got all of these external pressures from everybody else. And I guess when you're in a space where you can truly be yourself and not be judged, it's kind of super important, definitely.
Totally. It's also where like the most fun happens.
Yeah.
Like there is, I mean, like those kind of like mixed queer parties are without a doubt some of the best, you know, atmospheres that I've ever experienced in any party or, you know, wherever I've played, because it's just, there's this extra liberation in the air that just, you know, when people feel safe, they can just really let loose, you know, and they do. And that's the joy of it.
Yeah. No, I agree with that. I totally agree with that. It's, it's just about being free, right? Without sounding cliche as hell, it's just about being able to just like fully be yourself. And I think when people are accepted, they can just be themselves in a certain space. It kind of makes everything. It goes back to what we were saying about kind of the specialness of like a secret party and things like that. It just adds to the whole like ambiance of the club, of the night. And there's something really special about that.
Yeah, when almost like the, you know, when the crowd is, they sort of becomes one consciousness and you're all just like, you know, having the like this like peak moment.
Oh, I love it. It's to be fair, like, it's not often that I get that feeling when I'm playing. I don't know about you, but like, it's really not often that you get that. But when you get that occasionally, it's literally like the best feeling ever.
Literally the best. It's the biggest buzz that, like, you know, out of anything possible.
Yeah.
You know, better than any drug, better than, you know, any other high. It's just, it's just pure elation.
Seeing people have fun is I guess we're lucky, right? What we do.
For sure.
By doing that, what was it like putting on parties and promoting in like on a weekly basis? That's pretty intense.
Yeah, I mean, at first I loved it and it was great. I mean, actually not at first, that's sorry, because it took maybe like 3 months to get it until the party like clicked. Yeah. And then it was a vibe. But for those 3 months, I mean, it's pretty soul destroying when there's like 5 people in a room and you're like, what the fuck's going on? I've just spent like, you know, so much time trying to put stuff into this. And then I'd be DJing at the party, promoting the party, kind of running the party at night, you know, so that was like, there's a lot of stuff going on and it takes it out of you. But once it, you know, you kind of had to push past that barrier and then push out your comfort zone and keep just come to my party. And then, you know, eventually people do come to your party. And that's when it starts getting fun and when it starts getting exciting.
Yeah.
And the other good thing about it for me was that it meant that I would be DJing every single week and I would be playing at different times of the night. So sometimes I'll be closing 4 till 6, which was probably my favorite time to play because it was kind of queer party. At the start, obviously, if things are a bit lighter, and then just in general at a party, I guess. And then, but by the sort of end of the night, I felt like I had sort of creative reign to just do what I wanted to,
give it some.
And take it as hard or as weird as, you know, as I wanted. And that was exciting because I hadn't really had many opportunities where I could really experiment properly like that.
Well, I guess that's kind of like a good headline spot, right? And when you're growing your career, you never really get to headline anything.
That's it. And you're then like, here you go. You can open. And like, okay, great. There's like the barmaid and like the glass collector.
And then when you get to the point where you're headlining, you just want to open the club and you just want to play music, just to like play chill music.
Yeah, it's been like, I mean, because this last year, really, I've been like, I mean, it's been incredible because I've got to play at all these like amazing venues that have been on my like wish list for so long, whether it's like Printworks or Warehouse Project, loads of these kind of big rooms where it's like, you know, you're at peak energy and you've got a, there's not really any give and any let up. And that's like a whole new different style of playing and, you know, keeping everyone engaged in those moments. But then recently I've actually, so then I've been, you know, wanting to kind of play some smaller venues again, just to kind of experiment a bit more again and just kind of get a bit weird. And, but I mean, I think it's, both are, I love both. So
yeah, they both have their different kind of payoffs, don't they? I guess like playing in front of like 10,000 people was pretty fucking special. And then, and then playing in front of 200 people is so intimate that you can feel like you're part of the party, and you literally control the whole room by whatever your next record is.
Yeah, that's such a, it's wild. You're like the conductor of fun.
Yeah, it's so wild. it's mad what we do if you think about it. Like, it is crazy. We are very lucky. I don't know.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I'm so grateful that I get to do this. It's literally what I've been dreaming of. So
yeah, man, you've been smashing it recently as well. You're like everywhere, like, absolutely everywhere. Like literally since I heard String Theory, I kind of like started following you. I think I actually messaged you about that record because I was like, I haven't heard a record like this in a long time, and there was something special about it because it wasn't trying to be it wasn't trying to be a hit, right? You didn't like put any like, you could have quite easily have got a top line on that and like made it a cheesy commercial dance record because it had that, like, it reminded me of like Eric Prydz, Pajanu and things like that. It kind of was just like a very solid club record that's just an instrumental, very simple but just so effective. It was just like unbelievable. And ever since then I kind of started following you, and literally you've just been like going from like, because being an artist myself and seeing, we all have goals, if you know what I mean, we all have things that we want to achieve in our careers, and I can imagine you ticking. I see you post something, I'm like, there's another one that he's ticked off, and there's another one he's ticked off, and there's another one. And I'm like, it's been amazing to watch over the, even during the pandemic, like you were doing a lot of big things in the pandemic, and it's been wicked to see. It's been really good to see.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, it feels like there's been some really intense months where it felt like there was at one point where it was just like every single day I was doing something that was push me out of my comfort zone, stuff that would be on my bucket list that normally I'd be like, I need to prepare like 2 weeks for this, or like, and it was just like, there's no time. It's like, you've got to do this tomorrow. You're doing a Mixmag stream. Oh yeah, you're like, you're gonna be on the cover of Mixmag.
there was
a million things that all kind of happened at once, and it was kind of just trying to just like stay focused and get through it and just enjoy the ride of it all. So it's been, it's just been incredible. But I think as well, it comes, you dream of all these things, and then I think obviously these like new challenges come up, and then obviously there's other things that you didn't think you'd think about, but you know, if you're doing the right things, if you're, I think for me as well, I felt like I've had like quite a big breakthrough during lockdown, because at the start of lockdown, I was totally sort of, I felt like, I mean, I was just about to go on tour in the UK for the first time, like first proper tour. I'd just done the Mixmag Lab. I just had a Central New Tune. It felt like there was, things were, you know, finally like chipping away for so long, things were coming together. And then there was the pandemic, and it was like, no, actually, I'm going to stop you there. So that was like really demotivating. And then I ended up doing an idea generation course that kind of kickstarted my creativity again.
What's that?
So it's by this guy called Mike Monday, and I think he actually did it for free at the start of the first lockdown in the UK. And I was like, okay, well, there's no harm in trying this. I'm literally, you know, sat at home. I felt like I was in a big hole. And that kind of, I ended up writing like 100 track demos in 2 weeks or something, which is just like obscene amount, and something that I haven't written as much again. And it was the most I'd ever written. But that kind of then just became a starting point for actually putting together a big body of work during lockdown.
So what the Mike Monday thing, what was the basis of that?
So the like what you do is you'd create, and you can kind of do it in any, however you create music, could translate. So you basically get five tracks. Mm-hmm. So it could be like drums, bass, strings, you know, whatever. Yeah, and you could pick five that you kind of like to write with. It could be a vocal.
Yeah.
And then you basically just write in the parts for each bit, but you don't really give it too much attention. You're not going back and like tweaking everything, EQing everything, mixing it down. You're kind of just getting everything down, and you're kind of getting into a flow where you're just creating, basically. Yeah. And then eventually when you kind of start getting into that flow, you know, you end up just being able to kind of, I don't know, you're kind of just channeling something from somewhere. That, you know, obviously there's a load of shit in there as well that,
of course,
you know, we'll never see the light of day. But there's even just having a bank of drafts of stuff that you can kind of click back into and just, so that was kind of, that in itself. And then it kind of evolves through, and then you start doing it, instead of doing it with stuff that you love making music on, you randomly select a sound and then you have to make something with it.
Okay.
So it just kind of throws you into, like, you know, into a different trajectory that, it's more about discovery rather than design, I think.
Yeah.
So that, you know, you're kind of going into the studio not really knowing what's going to come out. And I kind of love that about making music. And it's, I feel now I'm kind of, I think, a balance of the two, like part discovery, part design is kind of, I think, where I've got a sort of sweet spot. But I love the idea. And I probably need to do another one, actually, where you just get a whole mass of
music.
A massive music down.
It's very, sorry to burn, but it's very easy to just like do the same thing over and over again.
Yeah. I feel like I'm probably the opposite of that. I feel like I probably need to do the same thing a bit more. I'm always just like, always kind of pushing to try and discover something new or, you know, push to a different sound or try something new. But I guess, but I kind of, that's kind of what excites me in the studio. I kind of need that something new to kind of keep me
variety,
keep me hooked. Yeah. But it's, and with that course, actually, I just got the Ableton Push. So I kind of was using that as a base to play everything.
Yeah.
And because it's such an easy tool, like you can just go in, select the key that you want to be in, and then, you know, everything you press is
in key.
Is going to be in the key.
It's always so handy.
Which is, you know, because I'm not like creatively trained or anything. I just kind of taught myself everything. And even though I play everything on my own tracks.
Yeah.
It just felt like it gave me a bit of just a bit of a boost and free rein to just be like, fuck it, I'm just gonna, you know, go wild and see what comes out.
Yeah, piss about. That's amazing. And what came from, was that album?
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number smart beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number limited edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
Did an album come out of that, or did like a big body of work?
Yeah, so I did put a big body of work out called Wonderland. It was a mixtape album.
Yeah. That was in 2021, right?
That was 2021. Yeah. That was last year. I think I ended up only using one track from that.
Oh, really?
From that main bit, because I kind of felt like I was just on a roll, and we had a whole extra year to just play with. So I was just like, well, let's just, you know, that once I'd got my got my vibe back in the studio, I was like, well, fuck it, I'll just keep going and just seeing what comes. And then you kind of just keep going, and then if something else comes out that's better, you just you switch it out. But the track that I did use on there is a track called For Now, which is the track that I closed the mixtape with, which is just like just super emotive. And it was even when I was just writing it, I could just feel that there was like so much emotion in it. And it was kind of just like I didn't know where it came from, but you know, just from getting into that creative flow, I think that sometimes when the best stuff just happens.
Yeah, man, totally. Do you like old rave records?
Yeah, I feel like I kind of grew up on those.
Yeah.
so that's and I think in lockdown as well, I was like so drawn to old rave.
Yeah.
I don't know if it's because it's that going back to that freedom and we were just locked away, and I just wanted the most euphoric, hardest, fastest like music that I could possibly listen to, because that was kind of what was getting me through this situation that we were in by being in these four walls. And then randomly the flat that I used to live in during lockdown, I found out while we were in lockdown that the building used to be home to this legendary rave in London called Wonderland Arena. And it was like Carl Cox used to play there, Frankie Knuckles, The Prodigy. And like, how am I just finding this out now? And it was as I was writing loads of this high energy rave. And I was like, this must be a sign from the universe that I'm doing something right, that I've just, everywhere you can be locked down, the fucking building used to be this like mad rave. So I ended up calling the mixtape Wonderland in its honor. So especially around then, I was really, really drawn to it. And I think because even now in sets, I kind of been playing a lot of sort of harder, even some hard house and some trance that I've been like slotting in towards the end of sets that just feels like it's, it fits in. It's not like I'm doing a whole set of it, but it will, sometimes it just gives you that energy that you need.
Just works,
And it's been nice to kind of be able to play out these records that I was listening to back in the day when I wasn't able to, when I was just mixing in my bedroom before I could go out.
Yeah, no, I feel that. I used to do that with drum and bass quite a lot, because growing up in the Southwest, I don't know about what it was like in Torquay, but Bristol was like drum and bass, still is.
The spot.
It's like drum and bass, Mecca. And I used to play quite a bit of drum and bass, I'd make an edit and it would go into drum and bass and then go back into house music.
Nice, I like that idea.
Yeah, it's fun, I guess. It's just like people aren't expecting it.
I guess quite fast, so you got because I wrote one of the tracks on the mixtape album is basically like a jungle track. It's like 160. But I can't really play it in that many sets, or I can play it at the end. And, the next DJ just got to deal with
it. Fuck the next DJ over. there's something special about it, or goes back to what we were saying about moments in a club. And those are the moments that people remember, I find, is when you do something different. It kind of just changes the whole vibe of the room up. Is
totally
there.
I always love surprising.
Yeah.
In sets.
Yeah, because it's very easy just to kind of play the same sort of stuff, and kind of you're playing on the same lineup where everyone's kind of playing similar music, whether it's a house or techno or whatever lineup. But it's very like, I was listening to a Ketama mix the other day, and I never really listened to mixes. I'm not one to listen to mixes. They just do my head in, if I'm honest. And I was listening to a Ketama mix, and I was like, this dude's playing some really interesting music that I wouldn't expect. And I'd love to hear this in a, this would go down in a club really well.
Yeah, Ketton is amazing. He's a friend of mine and one of the producers I play the most in my sets.
Yeah, his production's wicked. He's solid. Yeah, productions.
I've played with him a few times. He's great DJ.
Yeah.
And artist in general.
I want to talk about Family Planning, your label.
Yeah.
One of the best label names out there, if I'm honest. There's hidden messages all over it, if I'm honest. And I love it. What was the whole idea behind the name? I've got to ask. It's the most generic question as well, but I've got to ask.
So originally I was thinking it was going to be a club night. I'd kind of stopped doing What Club, was focusing on making music, and then I was kind of missing doing parties.
So I
think I'd always just had a bank of club names and club ideas, always bubbling under, and then Family Planning was the one that really stuck. And part of it was basically especially true for queer kids and the LGBTQ+ community, but people find their family on the dance floor. Sometimes they've been abandoned by their parents, it happens a lot, and then you're finding literally your new family on the dance floor. And obviously it happens in, I've met some of my best friends in the world. The first time I ever went to the monastery in Torquay, I met a girl on the dance floor. She's been one of my best mates, for 20 years. So that's, the ethos behind it is that you find your family on the dance floor, and then obviously it's got just Family Planning as the name adds an extra meaning. And it's, so that was the original concept behind it. And, and the ethos that I wanted it to be about for the next night, about, you find your family on the floor.
Yeah.
And again, so that also translated into music, and then we turned it into a label.
Yeah, it's an amazing name, and I really like the kind of concept behind it. Are you releasing other artists' music on it, or are you just doing yourself at the moment?
I think I am actually going to release, I'm going to start doing that this year. Yeah. 'Cause I feel like there's this whole crew of us all coming through. We're all mates. So there will be some bits coming out on it. I'm actually going to release. I've got a release coming out this Friday. I'm not sure when Friday the 11th.
Okay, it will be out by the time this goes live.
Cool. So the track's out now, and it's called Damarung, and it's kind of a super emotive techno tune.
Yeah.
But that's going to be the first release on Family Planning for about a year and a half, or maybe 2 years.
Yeah.
And I just wanted to kind of have a place where I can release stuff, and where my crew can also release bits. And again, keeping in that Family Planning ethos of cultivating this new family, which is what I'm always about.
Yeah, it's super important in this industry to have that. I find there's a lot of labels that just release music and there's not really a culture behind the label. And I think there's the labels that really succeed on, there's very successful labels out there that don't have that family kind of thing. But for me, there's a longevity of a label, of a crew that just is about 10 people and they're all just a crew and a family. There's something super important about that, and you get that vibe when you're at the party. You get that vibe when you listen to the music. It's just, for me, that's really important.
Definitely, that's also been the nice thing about, I've been getting a lot of the gigs recently that I've been doing, is there's always someone that I'm really good mates with on the lineup, because it feels like there's a whole new gen coming through, and it's we actually want the best for each other. We're not trying to just clamber on top of each other so I'm always, just super happy when there's, my mates on the lineup. I guess it's slightly different if you're just going and you're headlining somewhere, but when it's, generally all the kind of bigger lineups, there's always someone on there, which is just adds so much more enjoyment to the whole thing for me.
Yeah, it's so much nicer. I've just started my tour over here in the States, and I've booked people on as to kind of come and headline with me. And it's just been so nice to be able to travel with people that are your homies, and you can talk about music, you can bitch and moan about issues that you're dealing with, and it's just so much nicer than like just doing it by yourself.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, yeah. So just it's almost like you're going on holiday rather than literally. Like, you're going to work.
And then just hope people turn up and have a party. But if they don't, you can still have a good time.
Yeah, that's it.
No, I love that. So what label did you put the Wonderland stuff out on?
So that was out through Skint BMG. Oh, cool. So I'm still working with Skint and BMG. I love those guys. Yeah. They've been great. So I've going to do a single with them. We've got a couple of singles coming up with them.
Yeah.
Stuff that's kind of a bit sort of bigger or maybe has a bit more legs, and then stuff on Family Playing will be, you know, my sort of more
club stuff,
sort of more credible underground club stuff that
because
I'm just making so much stuff at the moment. I think that's part of being, that's why I liked about doing a big body of work, is that, I mean, it started at just kind of, you know, it can go from disco to hardcore. Whereas I think this year I'm gonna maybe try and
wait, have you actually been writing hardcore?
I mean, it's all like, I was writing a lot of that in lockdown.
Oh wow.
I haven't, but I don't know if it'll see the light. I've played a few of it towards the end of sets, but yeah, now it's, I will think I want to try and hone it in a little bit so that it's well, for now, and then, you know, probably in a month's time I'll be like, nah, I want to make disco, or make banging techno again, or I just want to be, I need to be excited, and I think it's good to have surprises, and
totally.
I mean, now it's I think there's been so many, you know, people always want to try and put you in a box, and I've been quite careful to just not do loads of stuff in the same way, because my true goal and what I have been able to, is building up to a live show. So, you know, I was lucky to go on tour with 808 State and support them as like a little taster. But that's kind of always been in the back of my head. So it's keeping things sort of fluid until.
Well, I think that's the thing, is by kind of setting yourself as a live artist, you allow yourself to play so much different music, right? It doesn't just have to be 4/4. It doesn't have to be anything. It can be whatever you want. Because when you're live, people are expecting a live show. They're not expecting you to DJ.
Yeah, exactly. I think that was one of the great things about one of the positives that came out of lockdown, is that, you know, there weren't any clubs. So it kind of just took out this pressure of having to make something that's just going to, you know, keep people jumping up and down for 5 minutes. Like, it's, you know, you can open it up and explore. And I've like... You know, I was writing loads of really sort of emotional, slower stuff. I didn't put out or put on the album, but just as an experiment, and just to feel free to kind of create what you want was just quite liberating.
Yeah,
scary now though, because you're just like, what the fuck am I going to make today?
Yeah, and I think there's certain, like, for me, I don't know about you, but I find our music nowadays is like our business card to get gigs, and it's pretty hard to like be, or like when you're putting out music, I don't know about you, but do you like stress about if it's going to do well on streaming, if it's going to do, how it's going to do on radio? I don't know about you, but for me, it's like, that's a big thing for me, where we kind of gauge the success of a record. And I think, although I don't kind of make music to be successful on the radio or streaming, there's a part of in my head, probably subconsciously, that's going, hang on a minute, Will, this is gonna never get played on radio, and this is never gonna get playlisted on Spotify. Do you ever get that with when you're writing?
Totally. I mean, I think it depends on what I'm writing as well at the time. Like, I think if I'm writing something that I'm thinking like, okay, this could potentially do well on radio. But also what I found out is that sometimes you actually just never know, because String Theory.
Yeah.
I mean, no one even wanted to, we sent it to some radio pluggers. They didn't want to even do it, because it was like, it just sounded so different. You know, it was just a little club record in theory that, you know, you could just, so also now.
What radio pluggers was that? Come on, call them out. It wasn't Jacko.
But
was
to be
it?
Fair, it didn't sound like a radio track. A sort of standard track that would do well on the radio, but it just turned out that you know, just having something that was, I guess, so just strong and simple and different to what was out is what sort of, what pushed it through. So part of it is, now I try not to worry about it too much, but of course you want what you're doing to be successful. But if you start thinking about that, for me, when I'm in the process, then it can just be a real sort of creativity kill. But I do think about it, and where I like, now there's all these pressures of like, if I put a track out, where is it going to place me? Am I playing with the right artists? You know, am I playing at the right things that I want to play at? So there's all these, like, it's such a fine line of, you know, where to, of all these, it's like this massive game of chess. I think it's less so much now. I feel there's a lot of new people coming through that are kind of bucking that trend and just releasing different types of music that aren't expected. And I think if we continue to do that, then it should just free up things for other artists.
There's a huge, there's a huge scene in the UK right now that there's a lot of people just like, they're putting out loads of kind of different house music or different electronic music that's just like, not necessarily club music, but not necessarily not club music, if that makes sense.
I guess there's that kind of, I heard Jaguar talking about it, like, do you mean like more like the chill house stuff where it's kind of dancey and breaksy, but you could have it on a Sunday at home, or you could kind of have it at the start of a night out on a,
like what Tisha's doing, like what Fred Again's doing, and kind of, and also similar to what you're doing on some of the records you're releasing. It's like Malgrab, that kind of DJ Pool Boy. It's kind of this whole, like, I guess it's like the lo-fi scene, the lo-fi crew. Which is really interesting, because as I love listening to that music, would I necessarily play it if I'm headlining? No, because it's just not going to work. But if I'm opening, if I'm opening in a club, then it's kind of perfect for it. It's really nice to see something. There hasn't been anything like this for a while that I'm like, wow, this is like genuinely really good music. It's not just like,
That's it.
It's not just like generic tech house that's just the kids are enjoying it because it's a good party record. It's like that, it's genuinely really well done music.
Totally. It's interesting. And you know, there's live instruments on it, there's you know, it's like there's textures. I mean, it was for a while, I mean, I just loved like putting, I put distortion on like every single thing and then kind of dial it back. So it's just like, just so that there's like a texture, or I like stuff that kind of makes it feel like it's a bit more live.
I like that. How's your how's the whole like live set process going? Because I know that's a hard process, especially if you're not like classically trained. And I don't mean that in a disrespectful way. Like, I'm not classically trained. And the thought of doing a live set, I've always wanted to do one, but I'm like, I can't play live. I can't play the piano. I can't do anything like that. So like, how's the whole process?
It was daunting. It was scary as fuck, because I feel like, I know I can just go and smash a set. Like, I know I can do, if I'm DJing, I know I can do a good job. But it was just this whole extra skill set and learning to play stuff, even though I'd already kind of played it when I made it, but just having to play it kind of on demand and learning how to play each bit. And it was kind of, it was just me up there. So then I had, for the show, I ended up like condensing everything down. But the first live show that I did, Islington Assembly, I had you can see this little, I had the Cynthia, the Jupiter X, and I got that because it's has like five different Roland synths in one. I was like, I can kind of just automatically click through, and then it's got the settings for the next track, and then it will have the bass, and I'll probably play the bass, and then the next thing I'll play the chords. And I was kind of alternating between playing some of it on the push and then playing some of it on the keyboard. I mean, when I was like freaking out, I'd be like, I'm just going to play it on the push, just because I think I'd just been playing so much stuff on the push that I felt like, you know, that is an instrument in itself, which I felt I'd like got to grips with. But then there was a drum machine, which I would kind of just freestyle over the top and create build ups or just add different percussion, just each time would be different.
Yeah.
And then I'd have two Zone K2 controllers, which kind of act as a mixer with four stems. Yeah. So I'd be like cutting out like drums, bass, then like percussion, and then kind of everything else. And then I would be doing effects on those parts. And then I'd also have some clips. So I would kind of be changing the arrangement of things at the same time. But originally I was trying to just go like all guns blazing. And then I was like, okay, I just need to just dial this back, because also as well, when people come and see me DJ, I'm quite energetic and I'm jumping about. And I think, you know, if they then came to see me and I'm just like my head's down you know, like that's not the kind of performer that I am. I'm kind of engaged with everyone and up and high energy. So I kind of dialed it back and trying to get a balance where I can still do both of those things. Mm. But it is really daunting and it's fucking scary.
Yeah, I bet.
And it was, so I think it, for me, I think it will definitely keep evolving. You know, I like the idea of having more hardware and then sort of being able to manipulate sounds. Rather than just playing every single note,
because
also as well, people want to hear the track in the way that it's, you know, they want it to still sound
in its original
form. You know,
so
it's it's just something that I'm still evolving, but
that's
cool. it was a challenge to kind of pull everything. I basically had to put everything inside a hand luggage case, because on the tour I was doing live show and then I was DJing separately, so sometimes I'd have fly to a gig. I played at a festival in Aberdeen, which is like really far up in Scotland, and it was going to be like a 12-hour train to get back to London, and I was just like, I can't like that's, I guess in the States people take 12-hour train journeys, but it doesn't really happen in the UK. So I was just like, there's no way I can do that. And then there was supposed to be a gig in Ireland, and I condensed it all down, and I was kind of glad that I did, because it just made me really streamlined with it, and I know that I could just kind of, you know, rock in with that. But I also want to start exploring with my voice as well. There's a couple of tracks where I've got them on, so I think that will be something that I'll develop, and can be like an extra. Well, I mean, I've sang all my tracks and it sounds good. But I mean, it's something new that I'm exploring.
That's cool.
I wouldn't necessarily say that I was a singer, but it is. I would be writing music and then I would just hear vocals that melody, I would then just put down. And there's a couple of them that I'm enjoying. So
that's dope. I love that. What's it like? Because I've like a side project that kind of isn't really doing anything at the moment, and it's like a duo between me and a mate, and we were gonna do a live show, and then our laptop, it was like we were playing it a festival in California, and the tent was so hot that the laptop just like died.
Just not having it,
just like, yeah, we thank God we did sound check. But we turned it on and like it wasn't even the hottest of part of the day, and we did sound check and the laptop was just like, no, absolutely not. But the process for like kind of going through that live setup for us, like we're actually planning what the set list is, which is such a strange concept from a DJ. Because for me as a DJ, I don't plan a set list. I know roughly what I'm going to play, but we don't plan it. How did you find that? Because you're like, oh, at this time, this record's going to come on and this record's going to come on. Like, how did you find that?
Yeah, I mean, it was, I actually ended up changing it after, after a couple of sets, because I ended up changing it. But I mean, it is, you know, I was just starting with stuff that was a bit sort of softer and not as intense, but also not super chill. Like you want it to still, you want to start kind of like at a mid level still, where it's still got some energy. And then I would end with the Euphoria track, which was just like 160 BPM. So that for me, it was like, that was the track that I knew I had to end with, because it was just such peak energy.
Yeah.
And in a live setting, like that's kind of where you want to leave them on a high. So I knew that was going to be the case. And then it was kind of just you know, slotting things around and seeing what felt right, until it got into a place where I was like, okay, this feels like a good flow.
Yeah.
And also as well, I was having to make sure that things were kind of in key as they were coming through, so that certain parts I would be sampling out. There's like a little vocal part of one of my tracks, and I would like, I took that out, sampled it, and then was like pitching it up so that it would be playing on top of the old track at a higher pitch. Playing on top of the new track at a higher pitch.
Yeah.
So that everything just felt like it was all kind of coming together. But then you're getting like a new sound that you wouldn't have heard, you know, on either of the tracks or in a DJ set.
That's cool.
So it was literally just trial and error, and I guess from just knowing from playing a lot, just kind of, you know, thinking what you think is going to work. But it is a strange concept, you know, because obviously we're just completely free and fluid when we DJ. If something's not working, we can just be like, see you later, and just, or if, you know, if we want to change a track or up the tempo or whatever, it's, you've got free reign. But when it's a live set, you're kind of a bit more set. The good thing with Ableton Push though is that I could kind of skip things forward. If something was kind of going on a bit longer than the crowd were ready for, I could start bringing in things That's earlier. Cool. And again, also keep things looped. And create build-ups with the drum machine. Start adding snare rolls and, you know, creating a bit more drama at points if I felt like it needed it.
Is there, I haven't seen the live set, but is there like a plan to do anything visually? Because you're quite a visual person, like you said. Is there like anything that you kind of got in your head where you're like, this is the goal for the live set?
Yeah, I mean, I definitely want to have a full like audio visual 360 immersive show. Like that would be incredible. You know, like I've got, it would be amazing to do it at something like the Roundhouse in Camden where it's just, you know, but for when I was touring with 808 State, I was the support, so I wasn't really able to do my any kind of visual side of stuff. We did have visuals on when I did my first live show at Islington Assembly, and it was kind of a mishmash of, I've got this kind of little like dancing man icon which
twists I've seen that.
And turns so we kind of had him jumping about. But I think the plan for the next live show is I'm going to put another body of work together and have an album which is like a proper artist album. And I think when I tour that as a proper live show, then everything will be work, you know, considered, and there will be a full visual show to go with it as well.
Is your plan to be a full-on album artist?
I love the idea of doing albums. Like for me, I think I've grown up with dance albums. I love the artistry of putting a piece of music together that's not just, you know, a track here, a track there. Ever since I think I heard Daft Punk's Homework album, I was like, I'm going to do something like this once I'm older. I think that's quite young when it came out. But that is what excites me. I like to be able to put in creativity into creating these, you know, a body of work which has impact. And I know it's kind of not really what's done as much anymore. You know, everyone just wants the single and they want to have like, you know, they want to have like a 2-minute edit of the single and they want it now. But for me, creating something that, you know, is a moment and a piece, that's what excites me.
I totally agree. I think we're actually going in, I hope that we're going into the era where people start making albums again. And growing up, we had so many iconic dance albums in the UK, like so many.
Yeah.
And it kind of shaped a whole scene. And it wasn't really, like, I was listening to the Kem's first album the other day, and although they're in the like electronic house techno field, it was more rock, which was weird.
Because, yeah, they were quite indie back then.
So. Yeah, and like it was all samples and shit like that. But like even Fatboy Slim, like his first album, like that, it was an all sample based album. But there was something super Indian rock about them, which I'm really excited with, like yourself doing an album. I feel like there's going to kind of bring back that era, maybe not that necessarily sound, but like that vibe. I think it, add so much more value as an artist that you're, when you become an album artist, there's kind of a bigger story of who you are as a, as an artist and as a person, I think.
Totally. And even just like on a, for a personal level, just making music, I think because I like making different genres, it kind of gives me the freedom to, you know, to maybe make something that's a bit more over one way than I would do if it was just a single that, you know, having like a body of work, you can kind of create a story that makes sense and that gives you a bit more leeway to express yourself a bit more. Totally. But for me, I've just always, always dreamed and wanted to be an album artist. So that's something that I will continue to do.
Do it, man. Do it. Mate, we've just done an hour. It's absolutely flown by. What have you got coming up in the next couple of months just to so we can promote some shit and then we can
So I've got my single Damarung, which is out on Family Planning, which I've got a US tour which is supposed to be 11 dates over 5 weeks, but there's a couple of visa issues, so I don't know when, or just there's like a delay in the visa arriving, so I don't know which ones are going to be rescheduled. But I'm doing Cross Festival with Ben UFO, Fortet and Joy Orbison, which I can't wait to do.
Mate, that festival is so much fun as well.
It looks great.
Yeah,
and is it right on the water?
Pretty much, it's like you can see the water from there. It's San Diego. Have you been to San Diego before?
No, I've never been to San Diego. So
it's beautiful. It's one of my favorite places in America. It's a really good party, and the guys that run it are just so nice. And it's like a super well created or curated party. It's amazing.
Amazing. Yeah, I'm super excited about that. And then I think I'm doing Particle Flash with Tiga.
Cool.
A couple of days before that, I think that's at early March
in DC.
Then in DC, then I think I've got a club called Ronda in LA.
Sick.
So I'm doing Las Vegas with those guys as well. Denver doing Meow Wolf. What else is there? San Francisco, Monarch in San Francisco. Somewhere in Boston.
Yeah. There's a couple there. I always forget.
Just throwing random city names out. it's quite an extensive tour, and I think Mexico City as well.
Amazing.
And LA as well.
Cool.
So there's a few. I'm just so excited to come over. It's like the first time I've played in America, so it's.
Oh man, you're gonna have the best time.
I'm buzzing. Yeah.
Let me know. Wait. Text me the dates as well, because if I'm about, I'll come to one. I'll fly out.
That'd be amazing.
To check it out.
So you're in Detroit?
Yeah, I'm in Detroit. Just tour about as and when. I tour more in the States than I do anywhere else at this moment in time.
How long have you been living there?
In the States on and off for like 6 years. I've been in Detroit 4.5 years now.
Nice. What drew you to that? Obviously the history.
No, Detroit's interesting because you have this like amazing rich history of the city. Like there's so much history. Obviously like techno, but you've got like Motown, you've got the car industry. It's like so much history, but it's also it got fucked over massively. And is like one of the poorest cities in America. Or it's the only city in America that went bankrupt. But it's super affordable to live here. And you can kind of get more for your money than anywhere else in that kind of has a bit of a scene. And I really like, before I came to Detroit, I was in New York and I love New York. But I just didn't want to live in an apartment and pay like $4,000 a month. And never there. You know how it is. Like when we're touring every weekend, we're never there. So it's like, what's the point of just like wasting this much money? And then a friend invited me to come and rent one of their apartments in Detroit. And I was like, this isn't my forever city. But it's great, and it's got a cool little scene, and there's some really interesting things about the city that I love. So just try it out, and I've just ended up here for quite a while. But yeah, nice. it's definitely there's a festival called Movement, which I'm not too sure if you've heard about.
Oh yeah, I've heard of Movement. Yeah.
But it's like the most iconic techno festival in America. And the guys that run it, a company called Paxahau, they do quite a lot of cool shit in the city. And that festival is like the one in America, really. It's like the kind of whoever plays in at Movement is like at the peak in America scene, whether that's an international DJs or American base. So it's definitely an interesting place for that as well. It's the best time to come to Detroit as well when that city's going on. But
yeah, when is it? I'll put it on my vision board.
So. Yeah, do it, man. It's Memorial Weekend, which is May time. Let me just pull it up because they've just announced part of the lineup. Movement. It is May the 28th to the 30th. Yeah. It's fun. And it's right in the heart of the city. So it's like...
Nice.
Yeah, it's dope. Dude, how can people follow you and everything as well before we go?
Yeah, so Absolute is here on all the socials, basically. Instagram's probably the main one.
Yeah. Hey, thank you so much for coming on. It's been really nice to talk to you.
Yeah, it's been great. Thank you so much.
Keep in touch, mate, and keep safe. Yeah. And I'll see you soon.
Yeah, you too. See you soon.
Cheers. See you in a bit. Love that conversation. Thanks for listening. Please don't forget to subscribe, share it, send it to your mates, tell your friends about it. Keep safe. Have a great week. See you soon.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.